Hello, this is Tom Scott, the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, February 18th, 2026. We begin on the front page above the fold from the Paxton Buckley Lota School Board. Survey shows interest in wrestling. 88 students at junior high and high school said they'd want to participate in sport next year. Paxton. The results are in. And it appears wrestling is, too, to Paxton Buckley Lota students. An emphatic yes was the answer given by nearly 23%, 88 to be exact, of the 387 students in 5th through 11th grades who were recently surveyed about their interest in participating in wrestling if the sport were to be offered next school year at PBL Junior High School or PBL High School. The results were presented to the PBL School Board during its monthly meeting on Wednesday, February 11th, by PBL Junior High School Athletic Director Lindsay Allred, as a group of prospective PBL wrestlers, accompanied by their club coach, looked on. A lot of us are here because we're excited. And when I say excited, I mean like a five-year-old anticipating Christmas morning level of excitement, said Matt Greenberg, head coach, president and founder of the nonprofit Panther Paw Youth Wrestling Club. We're excited, and on behalf of those yeses and all the wrestlers here, we just want to thank the school board that wrestling is on the meeting's agenda and that we're having a conversation and really just remembering that behind every yes is a student who wants to be part of something special. Every yes is a student who would love to have another positive opportunity. Greenberg has been looking for an opportunity to bring wrestling back to PBL for a while now. Last April, Greenberg requested, to no avail, a relaunch of the high school's program only. Then, in January, asked the board to consider establishing a junior high program run by a team of parent volunteer coaches led by himself for the 2026-27 school year, and then perhaps eventually a high school program as well. The high school has been without a wrestling team since 2018. While the board's approval of establishing any wrestling program was not listed on the February 11th meeting agenda, only an update on the proposal, the board's president, Don Batchold, indicated there would be further talks once it is determined there is available space to store the necessary equipment, like wrestling mats. The survey was just the start of the discussion. I think the board just wanted to have an understanding of the number of youth who are invested in this, Batchold said after Allred presented the survey results and asked, do we need to dig deeper? According to Allred, the survey asked students currently in 5th through 11th grades whether they would be interested in participating in wrestling if the sport were to be offered at PBL next winter. The survey also asked each student's grade, level, and gender. As proposed, the program would be for both boys and girls. I was kind of taken aback by the results, honestly, Allred told the board. There was no outlier. There was no grade level where, like, they were all yeses. It was nicely spread throughout, really distributed nicely. And honestly, there were just as many girls as boys. The results showed 20 yes answers from incoming sixth graders, including 13 male, 6 female, and 1 student who preferred not to say their gender, 16 from incoming seventh graders, 8 male, 8 female, 9 from incoming 8th graders, 3 male and 6 female, 10 from incoming 9th graders, 9 male and 1 female, 13 from incoming 10th graders, 8 male and 4 female, 1 who preferred not to say their gender, 9 coming from 11th graders, 6 male, 2 female, and 1 who preferred not to say their gender, and 11 from incoming 12th graders, 10 male and 1 female. Also on the front page from the Paxton City Council, Paxton cops to purchase new body cameras and in-car cameras. Police working to phase out old camera systems. Paxton. The Paxton Council gave Police Chief Coy Cornett the go-ahead on Tuesday, February 10th, to spend an estimated $24,690 on the purchase of 2 in-car cameras and 3 body-worn camera systems for use by his officers. Prior to the Council's 6-0 vote, Cornett said 4 of the police department's 6 squad vehicles are already equipped with new Panasonic iPro camera systems, and 2 additional in-car units will complete the phasing out of old equipment. "That's the newest system we have," Cornett said, "and we want to have the rest of our squad cars that way too." In addition to the new 2 new in-car cameras, 3 new body-worn cameras will be purchased, with 1 to be used by the police department's school resource officer, Brandon Ryan. Cornett said his agency still has 8 body cameras that we're using on our old system, and we got those in 2018. "They're still working. Granted, there's no updates to those now," Cornett said. "That's why we have to get the new system, because we can't update it." The total cost, Cornett estimated, is $18,570 for the equipment and $6,120 for the installation. Cornett said the cost will be covered using some of the $71,000 currently available between grant money awarded for body cam purchases and fees collected for vehicles impounded, DUI, and drug fines, meaning no taxpayer money will be involved. "I think this is a great idea. I think we should do it," said Alderman Mike Wilson, chairman of the Council's Finance Committee. Besides Wilson, voting in favor of the equipment purchase were Alderman Kristen Larson, Rob Pacey, Matt Greenberg, Joe Reinhart, and Dean Geiken. Absent were Alderman Eric Evans and Justin Withers. Also at the meeting, Mayor Bill Ingold thanked city staff, including those from the Streets and Alleys Department, Water and Sewer Department, and Police Department, for their hard work during what he called a particularly rough winter. Ingold said the Streets and Alleys Department has kept up with the plowing of snow, while Water and Sewer Department workers have been busy fixing water main breaks, and police have been dealing with investigation of matters that we really can't talk about. Said Ingold to staff in attendance, "I can guarantee that everybody has put in a pretty full winter so far. I appreciate all you do for us." Council did not open bids for the purchase of a city-owned lot at 354 East Fulton Street or approve an agreement to sell the property for that matter, because no bids were received. Upon the suggestion of the mayor, the council made plans to vote in March on a proposal to list the property with the local real estate agent. So far, the property has only been advertised via public notice. The council tabled until March its approval of amending an ordinance authorizing the sale of a city-owned parcel at 311 West Pine Street. Attorney Schering said an easement for the property must be formalized in conjunction with the sale due to the presence of an old 14-by-12-foot well house there. "We've got to get that documentation prepared so we can complete this amendment and get it sold," Schering said. Ingold, who said resident Larry Biggs, who lives next to the parcel in question, has expressed interest in buying it in order to expand his yard. Pacey noticed that it is not practical for us to take out the building. Ingold said Biggs is okay with that, though. Council approved a redevelopment agreement for property at 305 North Market Street, which formerly was home to Prairieland Insurance Group and Pekin Insurance. The redevelopment agreement calls for the city to reimburse the property's new owners, brothers Alex and Matt Glazik, a total of $15,000 of the estimated $23,600 cost they expect to incur to replace the small commercial building siding, soffit, and fascia, 7 windows, and 2 walk-in doors, in addition to some interior work. "It's going to dress that building up, spruce that building up," Ingold said. "Once the work is done, Matt Glazik said he and his brother planned to rent out the building for a few small offices. The council met in closed session to discuss the setting of a price for sale or lease of city-owned property, with no action taken after the meeting was reopened to the public. Before the closed session, the council heard from the owner and manager of Pax and Variety Liquors, G.P. Gotra, who said, "We're trying to add a 13-door walk-in cooler in the liquor store. With your guys' permission, we would go 5 feet out with the length of the building. This would allow more options and variety inside the liquor store, also opening it up for more alcohol inside." Now the last article on the front page from the Elliott Village Board. New paint scheme, upper area of Tower White instead of pale blue. Trustees also discuss plaque to be mounted at Tower's base. Elliott. With a paint ordering deadline coming the next day, trustees voted at the Village Board's February 10th meeting to change one of the previously approved colors for the town's new water tower. The bottom bowl area and legs of the tower will remain navy blue, but the upper area will be white instead of pale blue. The town's name will remain painted in navy blue over the white area. Painting is on schedule for the spring. The board also discussed a plaque that will be mounted at the base of the 135-foot tower that was built last year. It was noted that many of the board members listed on the plaque are no longer trustees, as the listing was taken from 2023, when the grant to fund the project was approved. In addition, trustees noted that two names on the plaque were misspelt. Since spellings were supplied by village personnel and the metal plaque is already made, the village may need to pay an estimated $1,000 for a new one if the current one cannot be corrected, said Derek Dieters, project supervisor with Milano and Grunau Engineers. After a suggestion was made to also replace the plaque's name with current board members and officers, no action was taken. The sixth of payments to both contractors for the water tower project was approved by the board members. The approved payments are for $922 to Caldwell Tanks for tower and tank work, and $95,490 to K. Woltman Construction for the small building and inside plumbing and electrical work to upgrade water treatment. Treasurer Paula Swearingen said the village's annual audit has been completed, so previously approved payments to contractors will now flow from the grant awarded from rural development under the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. For standard state payment procedure, payments were previously embargoed until the audit was successfully completed. The village received some complaints from contractors over the delay, but work did not cease. No plans are yet in place to demolish the old water tower. Meanwhile, there was discussion about the tornado siren that will be located on top of the new water tower. Options range from refurbishing and moving the existing wired one to purchasing a new and likely louder wireless siren activated by a cell phone app held by designated persons, such as the local fire chief. Also at the Village Board's February 10th meeting, Jana Leonard, one of two people who operate a business now leasing the former Village Cafe, was present to discuss utility costs and storage costs now being paid. Village President Josh Rowley has advocated for some time to have the renter, instead of the village, pay the electrical bill for the village-owned building. Leonard said there was not a problem with that plan as long as the village either assumes or eliminates a $60 monthly cost her business has been paying for storage of unused cafe property. Village officials have not approved a plan for selling or disposing of those items as previously promised. Leonard said removing some items, including former booths and tables, was necessary and approved to create space for her work. It was noted that the current lease has been prepaid through December 2026. Because of that, trustees decided not to make changes until January 2027. Sounds like we've got a bit of work to do on our end, Rowley said, speaking of a plan to dispose or sell former cafe furniture and appliances. Rowley said a move to update the lease will be an agenda item for December's meeting. Leonard said she was satisfied with the idea to take on the utility bill if the storage cost is eliminated. Also during the board's February 10th meeting, after a brief discussion, trustees voted to pay the full cost of $450 to resident Jennifer Doman for labor and materials to replace a damaged sump pump piping. The damage is believed to have occurred during water main work. Four sealed bids were opened for the sale of a large gun safe in the village's meeting room. Rick Bowen's bid was the highest. His bid was for $50.01 over whatever was the highest bid, making his purchase cost $750.01. Bowen is responsible for the safe's removal. And residents Jake Steidinger and Stacy Langendorf spoke of a problem with a pit bull dog living across the street from their house. They said the dog has been loose in the neighborhood and bit Steidinger and scared their children from playing outside. They reported calling the Ford County Sheriff's Office, and an officer visited the dog's owners and made a report. They indicated the problem has continued and asked about the village's ordinance covering animals. They were given a copy of the ordinance by village clerk Miranda Kaufman and advised by trustees to contact the county's animal control office. Turning to the inside, we have from Iroquois County Circuit Court, October jury trial set for former administrator, Kankakee. An October jury trial has been set for Deanne Shippard, a former Iroquois County Public Health Department administrator charged with theft, forgery, and official misconduct. The 59-year-old Watseka woman appeared in court on the morning of Wednesday, February 11th, with her two Springfield attorneys, Mark Wyckoff Sr. and Daniel Fultz, who discussed the trial schedule with Assistant Attorney Illinois Attorney General Haley Bookout, according to online court records. The week of October 19th was chosen, court records showed, with another status hearing set for 9:30 a.m., Tuesday, June 23rd. Kankakee County Judge William Dickinson was reassigned the case after its filing in Iroquois County Circuit Court due to the recusal of two Iroquois County judges. Charged in March 2024 with 33 felonies, including 8 counts of theft of government property by deception, 8 counts of forgery, and 17 counts of official misconduct, Shippard remains free from custody on pretrial conditions. The charges allege she stole more than $100,000 from the health department between May 31, 2020 and July 15, 2022, by submitting fraudulent timesheets claiming hours she did not work, including overtime and back pay she never earned. Shippard also allegedly made false representations to the Board of Health to obtain its approval to receive pay for 179 hours of overtime and fraudulently used grant funds from a grant for COVID-19 contact tracing to pay for her overtime. Additionally, Shippard allegedly committed whistleblower retaliation by firing an employee on June 15, 2022, after the staffer tipped off authorities to her conduct. In court documents, prosecutors argued that the evidence will show that over a 20-month span during the COVID-19 pandemic, Shippard spent at least 759 hours at a Watseka gambling establishment, an average of almost 38 hours a month, while claiming to be working. Prosecutors said they plan to present as evidence time-stamped video recordings from Winnie's Gaming Cafe at 1004 East Walnut Street, plus witness testimony from county employees who said they would often see her vehicle parked there on weekdays during regular business hours. Other evidence includes Shepherd's cell phone and office call logs and her remote access login information from her work laptop. The people intend to present evidence from both witnesses as well as documentary records reviewed during the investigation to demonstrate that the defendant was not only not working her required 40 hours per week, but was also falsifying her overtime orders, hours in order to receive overtime pay, Bookout wrote in a court filing last year. And there's only one obituary in this week's Ford County Chronicle. Kim W. Atkins, Cisna Park. Kim Winona Killian Atkins, 65, of Cisna Park, died Saturday, February 7th at Morris Hospital in Morris. Funeral services were held Monday, February 16th at Trinity Lutheran Church in Cisna Park with the Reverend Dale Fjordbottom officiating. Burial followed at Trinity Lutheran Cemetery in Cisna Park. Memorials may be made to a charity of the donor's choice. And we return to the news with something from Ford County Circuit Court. School district administrators named in suit seek to amend affirmative defenses. Paxton. Ahead of a February 23rd motion hearing, the attorney defending the Paxton-Buckley-Lota School District former superintendents Travis Dooley and Cliff McClure and PBL Junior High School principal Josh Didier against lawsuits filed by current and former students has filed a motion seeking to amend the affirmative defenses he previously filed. Attorney Michael Bersani of Itsaka filed the four defendants' answer and affirmative defenses to the lawsuits on December 12th and filed the motion for leave to amend the affirmative defenses on February 4th. In the recent motion, Bersani said the plaintiff's attorney, Bahavni Ravidran of Chicago, has no objection to it. The motion is expected to be among those considered by McLean County Judge Rebecca Foley, who is presiding over the lawsuits filed in Ford County Circuit Court during a hearing set for 10:30 a.m. Monday, February 23rd via Zoom. Also to be considered at that time are a partial motion to dismiss filed by Bersani on December 12th seeking the dismissal of the respondeat superior liability claims made against PBL, Didier, Dooley, and McClure, and a response filed January 30th by Ravindran. Bersani was given until Friday, February 13th to file a reply to Ravindran's response as well. The lawsuits, which were filed by Ravindran last summer on behalf of five current and former students, have since been consolidated into a single case and also named a fifth defendant, suspended teacher and former coach Rob Pacey, who is represented by attorney Emily Schnitt of Chicago. The lawsuits allege that Pacey inappropriately touched and harassed female students during his 17 years of employment and that administrators failed to properly investigate and address students' claims of misconduct, ignoring the district's own policies by never notifying the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services as required. Pacey was suspended last spring as a STEM and technology teacher at Clara Peterson Elementary School. He has not been criminally charged and has denied any wrongdoing. Attached to Bersani's February 4th motion were the proposed amended affirmative defenses. The filing noted that the three administrators named as defendants served in positions involving the determination of policy or the exercise of discretion and determined policy while exercising discretion relating to the investigation of complaints about Pacey's alleged misconduct, decisions whether to report matters to DCFS or law enforcement, and decisions relating to the disposition of the complaints, including corrective measures, employee discipline, and employee retention. Under the Local Government and Governmental Employees Tort Immunity Act, They, along with the district, are not liable, Bersani argued, as neither a local public entity nor a public employee who undertakes to supervise an activity on public property or the use of any public property is liable for an injury unless the local public entity or public employee is guilty of willful and wanton conduct in its supervision proximately causing such an injury. To the extent the district and McClure, Dooley, and Didier undertook to supervise activities on the use of school property, including but not limited to supervising, monitoring, directing, and instructing classrooms and sports activities and school employees, including Pacey, they are not guilty of willful and wanton conduct in doing so, Bersani wrote. Bersani also argued that claims of alleged events that occurred more than a year before the lawsuits were filed are time-barred by state law. Also time-barred, he argued, are claims that do not amount to sexual abuse as defined by state law, in addition to claims based on the Illinois Gender Violation Act dating back more than 7 years of the lawsuit's filing. From Gibson City we have, fire destroys garage causing $40,000 in damage. Gibson City. A garage in Gibson City and its contents, including a motorcycle, were destroyed after a fire engulfed the structure on the morning of Tuesday, February 10th. Gibson City Fire Chief Bruce Kalal said firefighters from the Gibson City Fire Protection District responded to the blaze in the garage behind a home at 407 North Sangamon Avenue around 11:33 a.m. Upon arrival at 11:40, a detached garage was found to be fully involved, Kalal said in a news release. Mutual aid from Elliott Fire had been requested, however, it was canceled shortly thereafter. Fire was brought under control in a short period of time and fully extinguished in approximately 30 minutes. Crews cleared the scene at 12:36. Besides the garage and its contents, which were a total loss, a vehicle in the driveway also sustained heavy damage. Damages are estimated at $40,000, Kalal said. Kalal also said the fire's cause appeared to be yard waste burning in a receptacle that spread to the garage due to dry grass. No investigation is pending. 3 Gibson fire trucks and 9 firefighters responded to the scene. And finally, from the village of Loda, water pressure issues prompt boil order for village. Loda. Village President John Zalliker informed the village board during its monthly meeting on Wednesday, February 11th, about a problem with low pressure on the water tower. It was found that a line going to a sensor was plugged up. When fixed, there had to be a boil order in Loda due to the low pressure. The boil order has since been lifted. In other business, former village president Carol Arsenault asked about water bills, saying that she, among others, has not received her bill. Treasurer Amanda Lovelace said the bills had been mailed and she had no idea why residents are not receiving them. Town Chairman Zalliker said he would like to thank residents Buddy McCreary, Jordan McCreary, and Bruce Bain for the cleanup of the railroad grounds across from the Dollar General store. Zalliker said it has been suggested that flowers be planted there. And it was announced that the village is now using Dial My Calls, a notification system that can send village updates by phone call, text message, or email. It will be used to notify residents of boil orders, water service interruptions, emergency notices, and other important events. To receive notifications, residents must opt in at dialmycalls.com. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.